Hey guys, it's Chris Franklin. We recorded this podcast before the news came out about the Eagles and center Jason Kelce agreeing to a new contract Friday. According to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, Kelce and the Eagles have agreed on a new $9 million contract that can go as high as $12 million worth of incentives. The move means the veteran center will be back for another season. We just wanted to give you guys this information to keep you guys updated. And now, our newest episode of the No Huddle Show podcast. Enjoy.
Hey Eagles fans, this is Mike Kay from NJ Advanced Media, and welcome to the No Huddle Show podcast, where we discuss anything and everything Philadelphia Eagles. You can read our content on nj.com/eagles, bookmark that, and you can subscribe to our exclusive Eagles Insider text service, where we'll break news, give you insider observations, and provide in-depth analysis. Through Eagles Extra, you can send questions and comments directly to us, and we'll respond to your phone. We also do weekly Q&As for an hour-long session and unlimited questions. With me today, as always, is my fellow Eagles beat reporter, Chris Franklin. Today, we're going to discuss the Eagles cap space maneuvering, the Eagles quarterback spot, and, of course, the future at punter. So, Chris, how you doing today?
Not bad, man. Not bad at all. I wish I had a Howie Roseman in my life restructuring some things around, going around and finding miraculously money out of nowhere. But, yeah, pretty good. How about yourself, man?
Yeah, you know, Howie's going into the couch cushions kind of right now. I'm well. Can't complain. Spent the last, I know we took the week off from podcasting last week. I was running solo with my little guy as my wife went home to see her family. And that was an experience. We talk about my little guy pretty often on here. Gave him a haircut. Did not do a great job with that. I will not be switching careers anytime soon. You guys are stuck
no
with me.
Cuts? No yeah, supercuts? No supercuts on the side?
And maybe we can get a sponsorship. That'd be great. A super cut sponsorship where, like, maybe it's like I cut my kid's hair and then, we put it on the website and maybe it's just sponsored by Supercuts. I think that'd be, I think that'd bring in the dollars. You know what I mean? Just raising awareness of the need for Supercuts.
Yeah, and just go ahead and just say, hey, you know what? If you don't take care of your hair and go to this barbershop, you can end up bald like me. Yeah, it works out
right, perfectly. Exactly. Like, so basically, I'll tell you this quick story because obviously that's what you're here for. So I'm by myself. I'm trimming my beard, and my son walks up behind me and starts touching his hair and starts saying, I want you to, me next. And when I put it down, he grabbed it and without turning on the buzzer, just, kind of did one of those things where you're like, and he didn't cut his hair, but it was clear he wanted it. So I was like, all right, cool. His hair's getting long. My wife asked me to actually take him to go get his hair cut. We cut his hair initially during quarantine and did a really good job. So I was like, all right, I can do this. No problem. No sweat. I can do this alone. Nah, not so much. He thrashed around. He really was very impatient. And now he's got like a weird Herman Munster-esque cut. So, and then we just found out that his daycare pictures are like in 2 weeks.
Oh no.
Yeah. So no. My wife is not very thrilled. Might have to take him to Supercuts, to fix this mess. But anyway, much like I'm going to do with my son and taking him to Supercuts and trying to fix a bad situation with my kid's hair, Howie Roseman is shaving off cap debt. Oh, you like that? That was a good transition.
How'd you turn that one? That was good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I had to pat myself on the back for that one. Kind of came organically, too. Sorry, guys. So Howie Roseman's shaving off cap debt. He came into this week with projected $43 million over the cap. So now he's starting to make moves. As we reported on Thursday, the Eagles do not plan to issue a restricted tender to punter Cam Johnston, who we'll talk about a little bit later in the program. When you're $43 million over the cap, you're not going to pay your punter $2 million because that's what the low end tender was going to be. He also reportedly, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, restructured cornerback Darius Slay's contract, which opened up $9.14 million on the salary cap. So now they're roughly around $34 million over. It's a huge chunk of change. You're basically borrowing from next year and potentially future years beyond that to lower Slay's cap numbers. Slay's only 30. He just turned 30 on January 1st. He's still playing well. The Eagles don't have any cornerback depth outside of Slay. So they kind of had to make this move. I know there were people that were saying that they should trade Darius Slay, but that would just create more dead money and you have to replace him. And, you know, just letting the young kids play isn't always the best route to go, because then you get into the situation with Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones. But we'll talk about that a little bit more. As this, you know, this snowballs, you're going to see a lot of restructuring. It's going to be less releases than you probably thought. We already know that DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffery are gone. We know that Malik Jackson is likely gone. You know, we've talked about Derek Barnett and that decision as well, but you're probably the cap relief is going to come more from borrowing from the future, which is not a move that has helped them in the past. It's kind of gotten them into this situation. Who are the guys that you think should be here next year that have bigger contracts that you are okay with kind of borrowing from the future to keep them around?
I think the one move they made when it came to Brandon Graham, I think that was very important that they did that, because when you look at it, at two different fronts, you're going to probably most likely have a very young team coming in the next couple of years with all the different draft picks, undrafted free agents, because of the cap situation that they created for themselves. So when you have a guy like Brandon Graham who's going to be sticking around, I think that's huge when it comes to leadership, because you want a guy who's, A, won a Super Bowl, B, has played at a very long level, C, has also had his own trials and tribulations early in his career and turned things around, because there are a lot of people calling for him to be cut early in his career, and he showed a guy who turned around, who stuck with it, and who showed that dedication, determination to remain in the league and get better, and he's gotten better over with age. So to have a guy like that to stick around, I think he's a guy that this team really needs. And then also when you look at defensive end, besides Josh Sweat, I mean, who do you really – and Derek Barnett still is a big question mark. And that leads into the guy I'm not feeling real comfortable with, Derek Barnett, because he has your best assets, your availability, and he's been hurt a lot. And when it's taking him time to go ahead and get reacclimated, when he's missed time with injuries, he's not as effective. When he's going right, he's good, but you can't depend on that when it comes to health-wise. So I think that's another position that way. As you said earlier, Alshon Jeffery's gone, and everybody knows my feelings about him, but it was time. He wasn't worth paying for that as well, too. And then finally, it's tough. I think Slay really should be here next year, and I'm glad that the Eagles were willing to restructure, because when you look at how many top level cornerbacks there are, and he did get, don't get me wrong, DK Metcalf did give him the business when he came in, when Seattle came in here last year. But when you look at what he gives you, and the ability to play press if he needs to, and ability to, I know they're going to play primarily play cover two, but a guy that goes ahead and can shut down another team's top guy, if you want to go that route, he gives you that ability. And seeing that the depth on this team at cornerback, you look at Avonte Maddox is more of a slot guy, not more of an outside guy. You just look at the depth and you just go, yeah, you kind of need to keep him here and not trade him. So Brandon Graham, I think, is the linchpin of this whole entire thing when it comes to it. But I think the Slay renegotiations will definitely feel comfortable with.
We should note that the restructure isn't official for Brandon Graham yet, but they are talking about it. It's been reported that they were talking about it. To follow up on Chris's point, they will almost definitely restructure Fletcher Cox, because that'll open up a bananas amount of salary cap space. Remember, they can't just get under the cap. They need to be able to spend immediately as well. So you're looking, let's say you're looking at the $34 million cap projection. You probably want to open up 50 to 55 million more, like on like you want to open up another $20 million on top of that debt, because that way you can sign the draft class, you can make some maneuvers in free agency, maybe fill out the depth chart a little bit, bring in a middle linebacker, or bring in a veteran linebacker, bring in a veteran corner, maybe bring in a cheap rotational defensive lineman, and a backup quarterback, which I think are the four pressure points that you probably want to hit in free agency. Like, I don't think they need to be signing a wide receiver. They're not going to have enough money to sign somebody like Kenny Galladay or Allen Robinson. And unless you're doing that, I don't really see what the benefit is to bring in a veteran wide receiver on a multi-million dollar deal. It just doesn't seem very plausible. It also doesn't seem like it's going to really enhance the group. You obviously have Jalen Reagor, you spent a first round pick on. You have Travis Fulgham, who has a lot of potential. Greg Ward's coming back as an exclusive rights free agent. It just, like, and then you have the young kids like Quez Watkins and John Hightower, who have upside. You might as well just wait till the draft to spend a premium pick on a wide receiver, because unless you're doing that and you're bringing in like somebody like Brashad Perryman, I don't really think you're getting yourself that much better. So I just put out a low cost free agent list. So let me bring that up, and we can talk about that a little bit. I think the Eagles need to do a better job of filling out their special teams group and make like a conscious effort to bring in a special teams player or two that can make a difference. They did that under Chip Kelly, and it worked very, very well. Chris Maragos was a staple. Brian Brahman was a really good special teams player as well. What's his name? The former tight end fullback. Now he coaches for the Bengals. Oh, James Casey. You know, so like they had guys that were staples of the special teams unit. And so I brought up bringing in Samaje Perine, who played under new running backs coach / assistant head coach Jamal Singleton in Cincinnati, had a really strong year on offense as a short yardage back, but he's been a staple of special teams for a really long time. Julian Davenport from the Dolphins, he was in that famous Laremy Tunsil trade with the Texans a while back. He's more of a swing tackle. I think when you talk about the Jordan Mailata, Andre Dillard battle, it makes sense to have a veteran behind both those guys in case you do decide to trade one of the losers of that battle, or you move them to another position. I just think they've gotten into a lot of issues with injury and inexperience. And Davenport is a buy-low, you know, one-year deal who can come in. He's got experience. He graded out well in limited snaps with the Dolphins last year. I think you bring him in, and he's got upside. Let him compete. DeMarcus Walker, people remember Darren Howard from his time in Philadelphia. He's got a similar skill set, can rush from inside and outside, kind of a weird body type, 6'4", 280. But I like him. I think you could sign him to a one-year prove-it deal, like roughly $2 million, and I think he can really deliver for you. Alex Anzalone was a standout at the Senior Bowl when I was there in 2017. Feels like it was 100 years ago. He's a guy I like pairing with Alex Singleton as a weak side linebacker. And then Michael Davis. Michael Davis is like a guy who's like under the radar. He started the last 2 years on the outside for the Chargers. Shane Steichen, the Eagles offensive coordinator, coached against him in training camp for the past 4 years. Low cost guy, not really on the radar. I like him pairing with Darius Slay on a 2 year deal. And then you can draft a guy in the first or second round at corner to develop behind those two guys. So what do you think of that list, Chris?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Anzalone, and it's funny that because last week I had that I had him as one of the linebacker options the Eagles should really look at as affordable. I think what he brings, especially with his athleticism and his speed, I really like the way, and I can see, especially with the way if Jonathan Gannon does go the way of the Colts and Mike Eberflus and having their most athletic guy play the will or the weak side, he makes a lot of sense. And I think he's also going to be good in coverage as well, too, especially if they go back to his cover two scheme a lot and pass things. And the Eagles don't have that many athletic linebackers on their roster as of right now that have experience, because we've heard Davion Taylor, he's this freakish athlete, but he's still pretty raw. So I really like the Anzalone pick. But getting back to what you mentioned to having a lot of special teams guys like focusing on that, I think that's where you have Michael Clay's job is going to come in really handy, because when you look at other teams around the league, such as like the Miami Dolphins, the Baltimore Ravens, especially the New England Patriots, teams that have been successful as of late, they've been able to go ahead and take the young talent that they drafted and the undrafted free agent talent and go ahead and develop them through special teams to be able contributors. And I think if you go ahead and I think this job's going to really fall on the young guys they pick in this upcoming draft, because if you go ahead and get athletic guys or even guys from last year, like Sean Bradley, if you go ahead and add these guys and you coach them up to this level, I think you can go ahead and don't have to go out and spend the money that you have to in order to go ahead and bring these free agents in, but you can go ahead and develop them to be good cover guys, especially on the kick and punt coverage teams. And then not only that, the more experience they get on that and more get used to the speed of the game, form tackling, everything else, maybe they become contributors onto the defense, are able to contribute more on defense. So I think that's more of a avenue I would go, especially when it comes to special teams. I go to the avenue of, hey, go target the guys that have proven that they can go ahead and they're athletic enough. A lot of special teams, it's just when it comes down to do you want to have a determination, or you have the will to actually do it? Because some of these guys have never done it before because they've usually been the best players on their teams, and they just go, all right, I don't have to play it. Well, and then they have to adjust getting to it. So I think especially when it comes to the special teams, it's going to be a desire thing, but mostly it's going to be if they're able to target a lot of these young guys that are able to go ahead and contribute to those things. And that's why I think the scouting staff department can play a big role in giving Clay piece, and pardon the pun, but giving Clay pieces to go ahead and mold when it comes to that and getting these guys to go out there and cover kicks and block on kick returns.
Yeah, I agree. So let's transition over. We're talking free agency. Obviously, quarterback is the straw that stirs the drink here in Philadelphia. A lot of people think that Jalen Hurts can be upgraded. A lot of folks want to see Jalen Hurts get a full year to basically try out as the starter. For that group, their thought process is sign a veteran free agent to back him up and compete and mentor him and push him. If that were the case, if the Eagles wanted to move forward with Jalen Hurts, who's the veteran quarterback that's available that you think would be the right fit to mentor / compete / serve as insurance for Jalen Hurts?
That's tough. There's two that comes to mind. If I had to choose the one, I'll give 1A. 1A, to me, I like Joe Flacco. And the reason why I like Joe Flacco is local guy that comes from Audubon. He played relatively well when he was with the Jets last year. I mean, he threw 864 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. I mean, for a guy who came in and filled in for Sam Darnold for a few games, I thought he looked all right. He's an older guy. He's seen a lot. He's won a Super Bowl as well, too. And he can give Hurts that veteran presence to go ahead and be that sounding board to go ahead and say, hey, you know what? I've been in a league for a long time. I've seen this. This is how you conduct yourself. I'm completely cool with Joe Flacco. I know he had the issues with the neck, but I think he'd come in here. I think he would be able to contribute. He's already contributes in the community a lot. He's helped out a couple of local charities as well, too. I know that for a fact. And I think Flacco would be a good fit with, and I'm going to throw in the 1B and Alex Smith. I think he would be a good option. But Flacco, I think overall, be more affordable, and I think he'd help out in more aspects than Smith would. How about you?
You bring up Smith. Smith was just released by Washington, or was told by Washington that he will not be back. But he's also got a relationship with Brian Johnson, the quarterback's coach. Johnson was his backup at Utah, eventually took over for him, became a Sugar Bowl MVP, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say Tyrod Taylor. Okay. The Eagles wanted Tyrod Taylor in 2019. Really bad, too. They wanted him to be the backup to Carson Wentz. He took more money with the Chargers, eventually got to play a little, obviously had the medical incident last year, and then Justin Herbert took off. I think Tyrod Taylor knows where he's at in his career now. He knows that he's going to be a backup. Look, I watched Tyrod Taylor take a Bills team who hadn't been to the playoffs in 20 years and have a miraculous season. The guy can play when called upon. I just don't think he's a starter at this point. I think he's got a similar temperament based on who former teammates that I've spoken with to Jalen Hurts, very quiet but very direct. I also think he would help you keep the offense intact. If you're going to build an offense around Jalen Hurts and plan to play to his strengths, Tyrod Taylor has very similar strengths. Both very mobile guys, both can throw downfield, but they're not known for their arm talent. I think that that's the right move, especially if you're going to run a lot of read options, if you're going to, you know, run a lot of bootlegs. I think Tyrod Taylor would be an ideal backup for him. I also think he would be a really good presence as far as a mentor, as far as competition. He's not a guy who's just going to sit there and be a backup, but he'll be happy with that role. I think similar to Nick Foles, he's going to want to compete, but he's also going to want to do what's best for the team. And I think he'll have immediate respect for the locker room, especially a young locker room, given his travels. He's been to the playoffs. He's, you know, played very well when called upon. I think that's the ideal move. But look, the Eagles will have options, and obviously they've got to feel good about where they're at in the draft. They have to, you know, worry. I don't know how much tape study you've done. I'll be honest. I'm very early in my tape study just because of the coaching hires and everything like that. Back when I was a draft analyst, I would start, you know, right after Thanksgiving. Now it's kind of starting this past week. So I've watched Zach Wilson. I've watched Justin Fields. Trevor Lawrence is not going to be there. I've obviously watched Trevor Lawrence. I haven't gotten into the Trey Lance tape. He obviously only played in one game last year, but you'd probably want to watch 2019 anyway. So what I'll say about Zach Wilson, I like Zach Wilson a lot. I like Justin Fields a lot, too. Justin Fields kind of reminds me of Don McNabb a little bit. But I don't know if either one of those guys has the potential to be a top 10 quarterback in the league within the next 3 years. And so my thought process on drafting a quarterback in this draft is, if you're going to draft a quarterback at six, it can't just be to upgrade Jalen Hurts. It's got to be to have a potential top 10, top 12 quarterback in the league. That should be the goal. It shouldn't be, hey, we want to get a guy better than Jalen Hurts. It should be, hey, we want to get a guy who can be a monumental talent in this league. And so you have to feel like that guy is going to be a monumental talent. And I don't know if you feel that way if the guy's falling to six. I don't think they really have the guns to trade up. They were smart in getting that 2022 first or second round pick that can become a first round pick. Because remember, the combine isn't here. We're going to have to rely solely on pro days for our scouting, you know, overtures as outside observers. So, look, it's going to be tougher to get information because scouts haven't been able to be on campus as much without the combine. If guys have medical issues or character issues, it's harder to talk to guys. And trust me, it's easier to fib and get away with stuff in a Zoom meeting than a face-to-face meeting. So that would be my concern in taking a quarterback this year. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, well, when it comes, I've seen a little bit of Zach Wilson as well, some of the other top guys as well too. Zach Wilson reminds me a lot of a bigger Baker Mayfield to me. And the problem I have, and I know this is brought up a lot, and people say it doesn't matter that, but his level of competition as well too. I mean, especially when he does all these highlight things where he turns his back and he's able to go ahead and spin away and turns back. I saw one play where he spun around like twice on one play. I still can't believe that defense do it, but that's what you get when you play like the lower levels of the non-autonomous five teams. But when I look at him, you can't do that in the NFL. And I mean, I'll give him credit. He's able to go ahead and lock back onto his receivers downfield when he's able to make plays like that. But I just have so many questions. And Fields, I think, to me, I know everybody says Wilson's the number two quarterback. To me, I think Fields is the number two quarterback by way of what he's been able to do as well, too, against better competition. So I have Fields, too. But like everything else, you have to compare and go and look and say, hey, you know what? If Jalen Hurts was in this draft class right now, where would he rank? And I would still rank Jalen Hurts above everybody except for Trevor Lawrence, maybe. Except for Trevor Lawrence. Not maybe, but except for Trevor Lawrence. So when you weigh those two together, I think you need to go ahead. You just bypass that. If you want to take a developmental quarterback with a seventh round pick, sixth round pick, or sign one as an undrafted free agent, fine. Go ahead and do that. Maybe the guy develops to something that you can trade him later on for a second or third round pick in the future. That's cool. But given what they have right now, given what's available right now, it's not worth it. And I wouldn't even take Trask in the second round. This class is just not, is nothing. There's nobody in this draft class that the Eagles will have at number six will be worth it. And you're right. They don't have the ammo. They have too many needs to even try to trade up to go ahead and get to the number two spot, which I wouldn't do anyway with it for these guys. So just focus. They need to just worry about right now. Just worry about getting the best players possible at positions of needs to go ahead and try to see what Hurts can do this next upcoming season. If not, then you have like the most likely, like you said, the first round was going to be a first round pick next year. And then couple that, the Colts pick with the pick they have next year and try to move up if that's something they want to do for a quarterback. But right now, just worry about filling the other positions and quarterback takes a back burner.
Yeah, I think, look, I think I've said this several times before. I think they need to do a better job of establishing the offense around the quarterback. I also think they need to do a better job building up the defense. And with the new regime, now's the time to do it. We've seen a lot of regimes come in and deal with what they've been given at quarterback. And then the next year they draft a guy once they've set their system in place and they've built around the quarterback position. There's nothing wrong with that. And so that's kind of where I'm at. Let's talk about the punter position, okay? Cam Johnson started off pretty hot last year, kind of careened off a cliff later on. I actually think it's the right move to not tender him. What do you think?
Well, I think it's right not to tender him, but I think they need to go ahead and keep that door open because of two options. There's two reasons why. A, Aaron Sipos. I mean, they sure love their Australian punters. They just love to go ahead and find these guys to bring them in from Australia. But he hasn't shown in the NFL that he's able to do it consistently. And 28, why hasn't he been picked up? You know, so I got my questions on that. And two, it's a small thing, but he's been the holder for the past couple seasons for Jake Elliott. And a lot of these kickers are tough. They're like relief pitchers. You know, they have their routines. They want to go ahead. They might make sure the mechanics are down. They get it set up. They want the ball the right way. And it becomes muscle memory after a while. And when you get so used to a guy that's been holding you for a while, and then now you have to shift over to somebody else, I think that's another thing that you have to take into account as well, too. So I think it's the right thing to go ahead and not tender him. But I would seriously consider bringing him back if Johnson's willing to take a considerably less number. I mean, would you bring him back for a lower contract value?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, a one-year deal at $1.6 million makes a lot of sense, for instance. And I do think the Eagles will be interested in re-signing him once they see how the punter market sets. It's just, it's not reasonable to put $2 million or sink $2 million into a punter before the start of the new league year. And look, the Eagles have to find ways to cut costs. And obviously Carson Wentz being a dead money pit right now and with the trade and the Eagles looking to restructure a bunch of contracts, they can't just take on more debt. That's not advantageous to them. So I think that's kind of where I'm at. Let's close out with this because we're getting down to the wire here with Derek Barnett. I've seen a lot of people suggest that they could trade Derek Barnett. The problem with that is that you'd have to take $10 million that he has into the new league year. So that means you have to cut an additional $10 million to get under the cap. And I don't know where that $10 million is coming from, unless you're restructuring a bunch of contracts and opening up all this space. It's still plausible. You can still trade Derek Barnett. I don't know what you're going to get for him. A team's probably going to have to agree to a contract restructure. But let's play a game of cut, trade, resign with Derek Barnett. Where are you at in those three categories?
Never played this game. Played another version of that, but yeah, I can see. at this point, you might as well see what you have. You might as well go another year with him. I'd restructure. I'd try to see if he's willing to restructure. Because the reason why is when the way this defenses are built now, primarily built around the outside looking in and edge with edge corner, edge and cornerback, and it's not, you can't really find guys with his potential skill set. And I say potential because his availability. That's the main. As I said earlier in this podcast, like, his availability is the biggest question for me. If he's able to go ahead and stay healthy, he can be a decent contributor. But we've been saying this now for four seasons. And it has to come to a point. I don't know if he needs to go ahead and look at his regiment. I don't know if he needs to look at the way he's working out, whatever it is. He has to find and pinpoint the reason why he's not able to stay on his field. And if he's able to ever do that, I think he can be sort of like Brandon Graham, where he goes ahead, he hasn't lived up to potential when he was selected and when he was drafted by the Eagles, but then over time he started to put thing two and two together and he became a really good defensive end. And it's possible he can do that, but he has to find a way to remain on that field. That's the big thing. His availability is the biggest thing with me. And if he's able to go ahead and figure that out, then hey, the Eagles can go ahead and think about restructuring, maybe even extending him long term. But that's the biggest worry for me. I mean, what are you doing?
I'm gonna extend him. I just don't think the Eagles should be in the business of getting rid of young homegrown talent that does have some upside. Remember, he's only 24. Look, the injuries do worry you, but right now you can extend him in a way that he'd actually be cheap. He'd probably be on the lower end of the middle market for defensive ends based on his production. Maybe you use that as leverage, because I don't know where he's seeing $10 million anywhere else on the free agent market. Another team that doesn't know him as well is almost certainly going to ask him to take significantly less. And you provide him with some long-term security, give him a three-year extension worth maybe around $30 million deal. But you're dropping down his cap number and you're making it backloaded, I think is the right way to go. I don't know what you'd really get for him in a trade. Is it worth trading him for a fourth round pick? Because the opposing team's going to have to not only trade for him, but they're going to have to sign him to an extension and give him money. So, again, I don't know what his value is on the open market, but I'm going to extend him and keep him around. I just think it's the right move. So, with that said, as my voice cracked weirdly, I sound like a cartoon. excuse me. Remember to sign up for Eagles Extra. You can do that at nj.com/text. We're doing weekly Q&As, hour long, as many questions as you want. Sign up for 2 weeks free. We have a lot of fun time. You'll also get breaking news, in-depth analysis, and much more. Remember to subscribe to the No Huddle Show podcast wherever podcasts are available. For Chris, I'm Mike. We'll talk to you soon.